Welcome back from the summer. Hope everybody had a good summer. It seemed to pass very fast. So this chapter gives us a choice between good and evil. The 16th chapter talks about the divine and the devilish qualities, Daivi and Danav, Sura and Asura Sampatti. In life, we always have choices. How do I deal with people? How do I deal with situations? How do I deal with circumstances? And Sri Krishna tells us that we need to inculcate these divine qualities in all our relationships, wherever we are. I don't have to be a saint. I don't have to be a Mahatma. I don't have to be in a church or a temple. But whatever job I am in, wherever I am in, whether at home, in the office, in the sports field, in the business world, in the world of medicine or philosophy, I need to bring these divine values in all my relationships. I need to practice love, compassion, kindness, service, sharing. I need to see God in all my relationships. How do I deal with God? Suppose I go to the church or I go to the temple and I bow down in front of the Lord. How do I deal with that? Him? With love, with respect, with reverence, with an attitude of gratitude. That same attitude that I have towards God, I should bring it to all my relations, my spouse, my child, my neighbor, my boss, my client at work, if I'm a teacher, the student, if I'm a doctor, my patients, co-workers. So just as I deal with God, that's how I need to deal with all my relations. Whoever I come in contact with, constantly I have to see the divinity in every being. And the Lord Sri Krishna in the 16th chapter says, one who does that, the divinity is everywhere. Every one of us is divine. But we forget that. We forget that I am divine, and we forget that the other person I'm dealing with is also divine. But Krishna says that the one who sees the divinity everywhere and applies that and practices that, he is me. He becomes one with me because he sees me everywhere. But one who does not choose this path, separates from the divinity and deals with the world as objects, as something to be exploited, something to be used, then such a person goes away from me. So Krishna says he not only goes away from others, but also goes away from me. So the choice is very clearly given in the 16th chapter. Do we want to be like Krishna? Do we want to be close to him? Or do we want to be like the demons? Do we want to be like Kamsa or Ravan or all these demonic qualities? That's why our Puranas show both sides, show the good. They show Krishna with Kamsa, Ram with Ravan, Prahlad with Hiranyakashyapu, so that we get to choose and we get to see. The stories are not just stories, but have a very powerful lesson. And the 16th chapter reinforces that message for us. We have done 9 verses last year, and I'm sure all of us have, I also forgot, so I'm sure all of us have forgotten what we have covered, but if you wish to revise that, we do have our talks on the website, firstpower.info. You can refresh them, you can listen to the talks, just click on talks by Dr. Anil Mehta at firstpower.info, and then you can see all the verses from chapter 7 up to now. Every verse has been put by Tony, who comes here every week. But I'll just briefly summarize what we have done in the first 9 verses. So Sri Krishna says, it's up there, I hope everybody can read the board. So he says, in the world there are 3 kinds of people. Deva, who are divinely good. Asura, he calls them diabolically fallen. If you cannot see that, you may want to move up. If you cannot see both boards, please adjust your seat. So Deva is divinely good. Asura is the diabolically fallen, and Rakshasa, the incorrigibly indifferent. So the Rakshasas, the incorrigibly indifferent, Krishna doesn't deal with them because they cannot be helped. These are people who are out and out criminals, you know, drug dealers, mass murderers, Such people, Gita is not for them. Such people who are so evil and so corrupt, only their karmas can cure them. So the scriptures say that through this lifetime, they have committed so many evil deeds that their own karmas will bite them and they will suffer so much in this life and in future lifetimes that it is the beatings of karmas that will correct them. So this chapter talks about the first two, the Devas and the Asuras. The Devas are the people who are intrinsically good, are pure. You know, they are, you can call like the saintly people, the saints, the Mahatmas, the prophets. Asuras are the rest of us. We all fall in the second category. So I shouldn't think I'm a Deva. I'm still an Asura. And this chapter is for me. And why do they say diabolically fallen? Because we know what is good. We want to be like Devas. We want to be divine. We want to be good. But we are so compelled by our vasanas, by our desires, so compelled by our habits, so compelled by the society. The whole society is geared towards selfishness, towards corruption, towards dishonesty. So we feel everybody is, so I also have to do it. So we fall from our divine nature. All of us intrinsically are the Atman, the Brahman, the Om. All of us are divine, but Devas, but we have fallen from that. And so this chapter is for those of us who want to be good, but who are not yet. Speech there. So the first three verses of this chapter talks about the Devas, the people who are divinely good. You can refer to it later on. If you don't have this, I would recommend everybody buy this set. It's only $27. It has all the 18 chapters in detail, including word by word commentary. And you may say, oh, we already reached the 16th chapter. What is the use of buying it? But when we get to 18 chapter, which will take about 5 years, then we will start the first chapter again. So the Bhagavad Gita will continue. We'll go to the 18 and again, because I myself have forgotten what we had covered in the first chapter was 15 years ago. So we will start again the first chapter and this whole Bhagavad Gita will continue. So that's why this book will come in very handy. If you don't have it, please get it from the office. It's actually 18 volumes, which has all the 18 chapters in it. So in the first three verses, Sri Krishna tells us about the divine. So people, what are the qualities of the divine people? Abhaya, Sattva, Samshuddhi, Jnana, Yoga, Vivasthitidhi. So people who are established in the truth, who are fearful, who do charity, self-control, Swadhyaya, self-study, Tapa, Arjavam, straightforwardness. So these are the qualities of the divine people, which I won't go into detail. We have covered that last year. You're welcome to see the website. And then he talks about ahimsa, non-violence, truthfulness, peace, compassion, lack of, arrogance, modesty. So these are the qualities of the good people. No enmity with others, no arrogance. After the first three chapters, then Sri Krishna says that there are qualities of the evil, of the asuras, the diabolically fallen. He said, dambha, darpa, abhimana, arrogance, pride, showing off, anger, harshness in dealing with others, ignorance. So these are the qualities of the asuras. And he says that people who have the divine qualities help towards liberation. So as you develop the more and more divine qualities, the closer you come to the truth, closer you come to me, the Lord, that is who is within you as Om, and the closer you are to me, the further you are towards liberation, the further you are towards peace and tranquility and happiness. And the further down you go towards the asuric qualities, to that extent you are bound, to that extent you are caught up in this world, and to that extent you suffer. And but he tells Arjuna, don't worry, you are of the devic quality. Arjuna, as we know, his name was Arjavam, straightforwardness, comes from Arjavam. He was very straightforward, very honest, very sincere individual. And he had some doubts which Sri Krishna was solving. So he says, you are divine. And he says, I have talked about the divine qualities in the first three verses. Now listen to the qualities of the asuras. And the seventh and eighth verse and the ninth verse, he has covered to some extent some of the qualities. In the seventh verse, he says, Pravritim cha nivritim cha janana vidurasuraha. He says, these people who are asuric do not know what to do, what not to do. They really have no idea. Even though they know it, they don't practice. They don't do what they are supposed to do, and they do what they are not supposed to do. And they have no cleanliness in their thoughts, in their actions, no purity. And then they think this world is just for my enjoyment. And how did this world come about? Just by mutual of man and woman, just by lust. This world was created. There is no God. There is no support. I am all powerful. And I can destroy anybody and everybody to get what I want. So this is what we had studied in the last year, before the summer, and in the nine verses. So today we'll do the 10th and then maybe the 11th if we have time. And what Sri Krishna has done has given us outlines, like when you draw a portrait and you want to paint it. So first the artist makes the outline, and then he puts more details, like if he puts mountains and then he puts a river and a little bit of road. But then he's doing the landscaping. He's putting more color in the mountain, putting trees, putting birds, putting the sun, rise, all that, the color of the sky. So Krishna has given us the outlines. Now he's going into more detail in the following verses. So verse number 10. Kamam ashritya dushpuram. Dambhamanam madanvitaha. Mohat grihitva satgrahan. Pravartante shuchivrataha. So kamam. Kamam means desire. So ashritya, taking refuge in desire or utilizing desire, dushpuram. Dushpuram means which is never satisfied, desire which is never satisfied. And how do they live their life? Dambha, mana, mada. Hypocrisy, anger and arrogance, anvitaha. Their life is full of these three. Hypocrisy, anger and arrogance, and pride. And mohat grihitva, and because of delusion, because of wrong understanding, asad grahan, they have the wrong ideas, wrong concepts through delusion, through lack of right understanding, and pravartante, and they work in the world ashuchi vrataha. Shuchi means pure, ashuchi means impure. So their actions are impure and they work in the world. So let us cover a little bit of each word, then we'll go into more detail. So they said desire is kamam ashritya dushpuram, is like fire. It is never satisfied. That's why fire's Sanskrit name is Anala, not Anila. Anil is the god of wind. Anala is fire. Anala is, you know what does it mean? Never says enough. Nala means says enough. Anala means never says enough. Does fire say, I have enough fuel? No, you keep on putting wood and keep on putting, offerings. It keeps on consuming. It never says enough, enough, enough. Fire can consume as much as. That is how our desire is. In this world, we are never satisfied. You want more and more and more. Give me this, give me that. Ye bhi hai, wo bhi hai. I want this. If I don't have enough, I must take the neighbors, or I must take my, you know, competitors. I must overcome everybody. So the society has become just consumed with desire. How can I satisfy all my desires? My desire for food, for drink, for satisfaction, for joy, for material objects, for money, for power. We find people are addicted to different things. Some people are addicted to alcohol and drugs, but others are addicted to more power or more money or more possessions. Just on and on, the whole society is. And when do the desires end? You know, when do the desire end? When the body is failing. Until then, you just want everything. But when my body cannot eat anymore, when my stomach is not working, I'm not able to digest, then you say, I don't want any food. That's like a poor man, a beggar saying, I don't want to be president. He can't be. So why he said, I give up being president. Oh, you are a homeless person. How can you be president? So similarly, when I have reached the state where my body cannot handle it, my liver is failing, then I say, from tomorrow, I'm not going to drink. You can't drink anymore. If you drink, you will be dead. So when I can no more enjoy the sense pleasures, then only the desire ends. Until then, it is on and on and on, just going on. That's why they say that this society is just wants to consume, wants to possess, wants to get. And why does that happen? They say mohat grihitva asat grahan, because of delusion. See, all of us are divine, all of us are complete, all of us have the Lord within us. We have the divinity within us, but not knowing that I am complete, not knowing that I am divine, I have this feeling that I am incomplete. I am not happy enough. And how will I be happy? How will I be complete? I have 1 million, but if only I can get 1 second million. You know, I have a big house, but only if I can get a house on the beach, you know, second house. I have, you know, this, and I want more, and I have one company, but you know, I want to multiply. Not that we are not saying that growth is bad. It's not growth, but it's the overwhelming desire, the overwhelming obsession with possessing, where I'll only be complete. So we are always postponing our happiness to next week, next year, after five years, you know, when my company goes public, then I will relax, then I will enjoy. By that time, you may be too old. So we are postponing our happiness or spirituality. People say, you know, you need to come to Gita class. You need to come. Swamiji's are here. You need to come to listen. Abhi to mera maja karne ka time. Now is my time to enjoy. Maybe after 65, I'll start coming to Swamiji's class. Swamiji, don't worry. The day I turn 65, I'll come to your class. First of all, do we know whether we will live till 65? And secondly, by then you are too old. Not that, I'm not saying that person over 65 cannot learn. There are some people here, so I don't need to. I myself am over 65. But the point is that the sooner you start this knowledge, the better you will be. You know, I see a lot of young people here, and that's very good, because that's when the knowledge becomes firm. That's where you can study. So anytime in life you start, this is wonderful. But the sooner you start. So do not wait till your body is failing, but from today onwards, again, have a limit. Okay, I need to work, but I need to work within this limit. I need to earn this limit. But the rest of my time, every day I should spend some time in spiritual study, in some bhakti, in, you know, remembering the Lord, singing some bhajans, doing some service. So turn the direction of your life towards spirituality, and slowly, slowly, as we get older, that's why they have divided our life into brahmacharya 25 years, then grahastha 50 years. After 50 years, vanaprastha means slowly you start withdrawing from the world, reducing your attachments, and turn your attachments toward God. And of course, after 75, they say sannyas, where you should not at all be involved in the world. So the rishis have done that for us. So first 25 study, second 25 work, and then after 50, slowly start your mind towards God. But what we do is with delusion, with the idea that I need to acquire, then to do that I do anything. If I have to cut somebody's pocket, if I have to cheat somebody, if I have to hurt somebody, if I have to stamp on people's heads. And the goal is conquer the world. I must be the most powerful. You know, people have this most powerful person in the city, most powerful person in the world. Nobody can conquer the world. Genghis Khan tried, Alexander the Great tried, Hitler tried. And nobody, whether you are Google or whether you are Microsoft or whether you are China, whether you are Russia, United States, nobody can conquer the world. The world is too huge. So I have to develop an attitude of contentment, an attitude of gratitude to God. I keep working, but at the end of the day, God, thank you for what you have given me. So that gratitude one must bring in one's life. And these people say, I don't want to give anything to anybody, not even to the government. I don't want to even pay taxes. So they'll do anything and everything to hide their money, to hide their income. This reminds me of a story. This boy who was about 6 years old wanted $100 for Christmas. And so he kept praying every day, you know, God, give me $100. God, give me 2 weeks. No $100 appeared. So he said, what I should do? I should write a letter. So he writes a letter. Dear God, please send me $100. And he puts a stamp on it and puts it in the mailbox. Now the mailman looks at the letter. Dear God, where is God? I cannot send it. So somehow it goes to the central post office in Washington, D.C., and from there, the postmaster takes it to President Clinton. Clinton was president and says, you know, you are the closest to God. So you are the highest. So here the letter is for you. So Clinton opened the letter. He was very amused. He told his secretary, you know, send him $10. Send him a check for $10 from the federal treasury. $10 is a lot of money for 6 year old. What's he going to do with $100? So secretary sends the check for $10. The boy gets it in the mail. He opens it. He sees $10. So he writes another letter. Dear God, thank you for sending the $100. But the mistake you made, you sent through Washington, D.C. And those rascals deducted $90 for taxes. They took out $90 for taxes. So I only got 10. He said, next time send it. So the point is that these people will do anything and everything to get more and accumulate more. And all their activities are poisoned by desire. Everything they look at is, what is in it for me? That's what Kennedy said, you know, ask not what you can do for your country. I mean, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. But their whole idea is, how can I get the maximum from others? How can I get the max? So the desire poisons every activity in their life. Whatever they do, nothing is pure. Everything is polluted. Everything is poisoned. There's a very, very beautiful story which Swami Chinmayananda says in his commentary. I'll tell that to you. It's a little long story, but really worth telling. So there were two brothers, brother A and brother B. A was older and B was younger. And they lived together in a joint family in the same house. And the boys, their mother lived with them. Father had passed away, and they were both married. So A had his wife and children, and B had his wife and children. And the younger brother, B, every night at 1 o'clock would wake up vomiting and sick and severe stomach pain. So he, what's wrong? Every night I wake up. So he goes to the doctor. And in India, you know, they use the word food poisoning. Food poisoning means that food was bad and you got poisoned. But he thought food poisoning, somebody is poisoning me. So doctors just said food poisoning, that's a very common word. So he said, who could be poisoning me? How do I wake up? So he says, must be the older brother's wife. Because she's trying to get rid of me, so her husband will get, it cannot be my wife. You know, she won't do that because she's not going to kill the golden goose. Every month I bring a paycheck, so it cannot be my wife, it cannot be my mother. So it has to be the older brother's wife. So he suspects her. He's very suspicious. So doctor gives him some medicine. So he's better now. But he says, tonight I have to watch. So as usual, the older wife brings, you know, two plates for brother A and brother B and puts them there and then goes back into the kitchen. He says, that's where he poisoned. So he quickly switches the plates. So older brother, what's wrong with you? You know, why are you switching plates? But their plates are identical, same two chapatis and everything. So this brother is foolish, and from childhood he was doing mischief. So he switched the plates. So he eats the food that was the older brother's. He tells his wife, you know, tonight the older brother is going to wake up at 1 o'clock with vomiting. I'm going to be fine. Because wife was worried too. And what happens at 1 o'clock? Same, the younger brother again wakes up vomiting, diarrhea, severe pain. He says, I switched the food. It is still happening. So how can it be? What's the problem? So he goes back to the doctor. He says, look, your medicine didn't work. I'm still getting sick. So doctor said, it cannot be your stomach. Let me see. He said, you know what? Go to the dentist. There's a dentist next door. Go see him. So he said, okay. So he makes an appointment, goes to see the dentist. And he opens his mouth and the dentist runs 7 feet away. His mouth is full of gum disease and pyorrhea and teeth are rotten and mouth is smelling. You can't even stay near him. So dentist says, problem is not in your stomach. It's in your mouth. No matter how good food you eat, it is your teeth that are, you know, that are polluting it. They're poisoning the food. And so what you need to do, you need to have gum surgery, you need to have tooth removed, teeth removed, and all, you know, and all dentures given. So the point was that he was blaming the food, but everything he ate was poisoned with his bad teeth. So similarly, these people, all their activities are poisoned by their desire, by their selfishness. So no matter what they do, everything becomes Jagat ahita ashuchi vrataha. Their activities are impure, their activities are wrong, their activities are selfish, and they are full of hypocrisy. You know, they want to show the world something they are not. So they will, you know, buy a bigger house than they can afford. They will, you know, buy bigger jewelry for their wife. They'll spend bigger car. Why? To show their pride and to show their arrogance, to show off to others. The whole society is geared towards showing off. It's whether I can afford it or not, I have to keep up with the Jones. You know, we find that, especially Swamiji says, in the Indians in the US, ayayo, that was his, you know, he used to use that scare cattle, ayayo. He said they are so materialistic, and that is true. If you go to people's homes, and again, I'm not saying that one should not have, but just competition, you know, bigger and bigger homes and bigger. Kids are already gone and they have 10,000 square foot house, 15,000 square foot. For what? Just husband and wife. You know, the most they can sleep in one bed or two beds if they want to sleep in separate. What are you going to do with that? Whatever extra money you have, use it to help others, to share, to make this world a better place. But that does not happen. And then Gurudev says in his commentary, it's not at the micro level, but also at the macro level. Not only at the microcosm, but at the macrocosm. What it means is, not only at the individual level, we are very materialistic, very selfish, but even at the national level. If you look at the countries, how they behave in the world, it is not an attitude of cooperation. There is an attitude of how, like China devalued its currency, regardless of what's going to happen to the rest of the world. So the selfishness is there in all our dealings, not only with each other, not only one city, one individual to another, one family to another, but one nation to another. There is no concept of United Nations. They don't think that this earth is the only thing we have. Let us preserve it. Let us take care of it. Let us preserve the environment. Let us work together. Each one is just producing what they want to make themselves. So this selfishness has permeated through the entire universe, through the entire world. And why? Because we have forgotten the teachings of our rishis, our gurus, and the prophet, the masters who talked in the Bible and who talked in the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads and Ramayana and Mahabharata, all these beautiful messages of the rishis we have forgotten. And we are just seeking three things. Ramakrishna Paramhansa very beautifully in his teaching, he says that the world is looking for Kamini, Kanchan and Kirti. Three K's. So Kamini means woman, Kanchan means wealth, and Kirti means fame. So these three K's are binding us, and people are just wanting to possess. And what is happening in the process, that women are just being treated as a saleable commodity, a house or a community or a country where the woman is not respected will go down, will not prosper. I was reading a very, very sad story, but the ISIS, you know, these people, these Islamic people, and in the name of Islam, they are fighting to establish a caliphate, you know, like an Islamic state. But you know what they do? Recently, I read somewhere, he says that when they, what they do is these soldiers attack a small village where there are not in much soldiers, and they will capture the village. And first they will do is anybody, young man or any man over 16 to 60, they are all slaughtered. They will kill all the men. Then they will go through the town, and the prettiest women will be taken by the leaders, you know, by the generals and by the colonels. And then the other women and children are sold. They're actually selling them, $50, $100, they're auctioning them. And they're sending them to other villages, to other communities, to other groups who want to buy these women and buy. So such kind of karmas when people are doing, where is it going to end? Where, how much suffering they're going to indulge in? They don't realize that. They, all they think about is, today I should be happy. But the amount of negative karmic debt they're accumulating is horrible. So these three, the women, wealth, and fame. For fame, I'll do anything. They are called Hridaya Granthi. They're called the knots of the heart. Knot means K-N-O-T, the knot that you tie. Three knots. And these three knots bind us. That's what the Upanishad says, that these knots are binding to us. When do we tie three knots? The time you get married, right? That's when you're bound, you're stuck. So these three knots bind us. Kamini, Kanchan, and Kirti. So the solution is, how do we get out of that? You know, so far, you know, I didn't mean to depress you, but that is the fact this verse talks about. But there is a solution. How do I get out of this bondage of this seeking and this wanting? So in the Upanishad, it is said it very beautifully, that these three knots, these three bondages, these three grips that have taken over all of us, how do I get out about that? So he says, it says it very beautifully in the Upanishads, Vidyate Hridaya Granthi, Chidyante Sarva Samshayaha, Chiyante Chasya Karmani, Yasmin Drishte Paravare. So Yasmin Drishte Paravare. So one who seeks the higher, Paravare means the highest, the Lord, the Bhagwan, the Allah, the Father in heaven. So one who seeks that, one who reaches that, Drishte means one who has seen it. Seen again, God does not mean see physically, but see as experience within and without, sees God everywhere. And one who is on the spiritual path, what happens to him? Vidyate Hridaya Granthi. All these knots of the heart which are tying us, they get broken. How do I get out of this? By seeking the Lord. How do I get out of this mad desire, these knots which are possessing me? By seeking the Lord. Vidyate Hridaya Granthi, Chidyante Sarva Samshayaha. And once he has started on the spiritual path, all doubts get cleared. Once he approaches the Guru with humility and surrender, the Guru solves his doubts. Chidyante Sarva Samshayaha, Kshiyante Chasya Karmani. And all his negative karmas get burnt in the fire of knowledge. His activities become pure. And not only, but all his past karmas also get burnt. Once he has experienced the highest truth, once he has become one with the Lord, then he goes beyond our karma. Yasmin Drishte Paravare. So the solution from how from Asura I become Deva, by seeking the Lord. By listening to the Bhagavad Gita, by giving the message what Sri Swami Chinmayananda has given us and applying that in our life. So this verse is a little depressing, but it's the truth. You know, what he's telling is what we are all going through, what we see. What Krishna is telling is not what was 8,000 or 10,000 years ago. Krishna is telling us what we see today in 2015. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is as valid today as it was told to Arjuna in the battlefield. It's none of these words are ancient. They are very modern, and especially the way Swami Chinmayananda has interpreted it, it helps all of us. So I would like any comments, any questions? Anything that you would like to add or? See, actually, there are three kinds of karmas. It takes a little while, but I can explain that to you. See, they say there is a sanchit karma, prarabdha karma, and agami karma. Sanchit karmas are karmas that I have accumulated in previous births and that I was born with. So they say this is not the only birth. You have taken thousands of births before. They say 84 lakh yoni, you know, 8.4 million births you take before you become a human. So to become a human is a lot of struggle, starting from protozoa all the way up. So I have accumulated in my previous births as a human and other, you know, animals and plants don't accumulate karmas, it's mostly humans. So I've accumulated sanchit karmas. So I'm born with those sanchit karmas, and then out of say, I've say 10,000 sanchit karma, out of that 1,000 fructify as prarabdha karma. It's like some karmas fructify right away, like I put my hand in the fire. Now the fire is not going to say, you know what, you know, next year I'll burn you. No, you get burnt instantly. You put your hand in the electric socket, instantly you feel the shock. But you plant a tree. Now mango tree takes 10 years to mature, while a tomato plant, you know, within a few months you get tomatoes. So depending on the kind of seed, you get the fruit. So similarly, certain karmas manifest right away, but say if I cheated somebody or I took a lot of money from someone and didn't deserve it, then sooner or later I'm going to have to pay back. It could be in this lifetime. Majority of the time it happens in this lifetime itself. But if it doesn't, if you get away and you say I fooled the world and I died, next life you'll have to give it back. So the sanchit karma, some of them appear as prarabdha karma. In this life, they become my prarabdha, that is my destiny. That's why I say, mera prarabdha kharab hai. You know, people say that. Prarabdha is the destiny. So these karmas manifest in this lifetime. And so the past karmas, some of them appear and then I have to deal with them. And so that's why if I'm suffering or if things are going well in this lifetime, they say, this five-year-old child, you know, got leukemia. Now, what did that child do? What kind of karmas? Why did God have to punish this? Sometimes even six-month-old, one-year-old child gets leukemia. They say, why are we? No, God is not punishing. It is that child's karmas. So whatever good or bad is happening to me is because of my karmas. It's not because of my husband or my wife or my boss or my neighbor. It's not because of Obama. It's all my own karmas. Whatever is happening to me because of my karmas, which are now appearing. So you say, I am such a nice person. Main to kisi ko kuch nahi kehnda ji, mainu kyon ho raha hai? You know, I have never said anything to anybody. Why am I suffering? It's because of your own karmas. So that's called prarabdha karma. So in this life, certain amount of the karmas manifest and others you carry on. Then what happens is in this life, I don't sit still. You know, we do more actions. You do good actions, you do bad actions. So based on your good and bad actions, you accumulate more karma. So they are called agami karmas. So agami means future. So sanchit is past, prarabdha is present, and agami is future. So whatever good or bad actions I do, I take my sanchit karma, I add to that more karmas, and that become my future karmas for my next birth. But a person who is enlightened, that was your question, you know, Jesus or a Buddha or a Shankaracharya or a Chinmayananda, when they are enlightened, then their past and their future karmas both get burnt. They no longer, even whatever actions they have done in the past, they get burnt because the karmas are done by the body. They have gone beyond the body. And their future karmas also get burnt. They have to go through their prarabdha karmas. So whatever actions are for this life, it's like an arrow. Once you release it, you cannot call it back. So this prarabdha, he has to go. That's why even great Mahatmas, you know, they suffer from cancer. Ramakrishna Paramhans had terrible throat cancer. He was in so much pain. And somebody asked him, you know, he used to talk to Mata Kali every day, to Mother Goddess. And somebody said, why don't you ask Mother Goddess to free you from this pain? He was in terrible pain from cancer. He couldn't even eat or drink. Everything used to dribble out. And he said, you know, Mata Kali, she's the Lord of the whole universe. Am I going to ask her something so small as relief from cancer? That's something minor. If I want to ask her, I will ask her for more love. You know, I will ask her to be with me at all times. And secondly, even if I do ask her and she cures my cancer, but this is my prarabdha. If I get cured, I have to take another birth for that particular prarabdha karma. So whatever I have to go through, I will. So that kind of strength, when you understand that this is my prarabdha, this is my karmas, so a wise individual has to go through his or her prarabdha, but their sanchit karma and their agami karma get burnt in the fire of knowledge. So, kshiyante chasya karmani yasmin drishte paravare. So that person's karmas get burnt in the fire of knowledge. Does that answer your question? Yeah, thank you. It's a good question. Yes.
That will be shown in chapter 18.
Yes.
When Shri Krishna says, with the gyan or self-realization, you burn all your karmas just like fire in a dry wood. How do you put this?
Yeah, see, the point is that a person who is suffering, yeah, that person may be suffering because of bad karmas, but the one who is causing the suffering cannot escape that. He cannot say, I am an instrument, because everybody has free will. And so if he is using his power to hurt others and to, you know, torture them, he is going to suffer. Nobody can escape them. You might say, well, you know, the person who is suffering, but I think anyway, you know, they say, gahana karma ni drishti. He says that the path of karma is so difficult to understand. Don't even try to understand that. You know, because we always give examples. It's not to point out. The idea is that having understood this karma theory, your point is correct. That the person may be suffering because she has done the bad karmas. That's why the ISIS came and, you know, sold her and all that. That may be the point. But the point is that the way I look at it is that this karma theory is not meant for ISIS or for Clinton or for Nixon or for... It's meant for me. So how can I take this karma theory and make my life better? So the way I can do that is, okay, I have done some sanchit karmas. And because of this, my prarabdha, what I am undergoing, yes, it is because of my karmas. And two things I do. One is I cheerfully go through it. Joy and sorrow, I say, that is okay, Bhagavan, it is coming, I did it. I go through it without complaint. And secondly, I make sure that in this life, at least, I don't do negative karmas, so that my sanchit karma should be better. My agami karma should be better. So I only have a choice of my present. I cannot undo my past. I don't know what my future will be. But if I do good karmas in this lifetime, my future hopefully will be good. And that is how I, you know, gahana karma no gati. In one place Krishna says, gahana, the path of karma is very difficult. Who knows? He knows. The one who is the karma phal data, one who has created the law, let him worry about it. What I have to do is apply that in my life. That's how I try to understand that. I mean, even though we talk about it, we have to explain all that. But ultimately, it is what I am going to do with this knowledge. Is that? Yeah, thank you.
No, I think it's a difference between a person causing pain to you and a nature is causing pain to you. It's a very big difference.
Go through is what I have.
Yes, the prarabdha they go through. I told you. That's why Raman.
They don't accumulate.
No, and even if they have accumulated, say, before they became enlightened, mm-hmm. in this life, their prarabdha they have to go through, but they have no agami karmas because
right,
they are not
exactly.
born again.
Of course, it doesn't apply to me.
Right.
What I'm saying is, for me, every action, past,
yes.
present, future, something that has to be looked through.
Right. Absolutely. No. First, for the person. For that person. But like Ratnakar, you know, he was a killer, he was a murderer, and then he became Valmiki. You know that story.
Yes.
Everybody knows, right? Once he became Valmiki, all of Ratnakar's karmas were burnt. He was no longer Ratnakar, he was Valmiki. He then became a great sage. He wrote Ramayana in Sanskrit. And so his prarabdha karma for this lifetime he had to go through. But any murders that Ratnakar had committed no longer affected him, because Ratnakar was dead. Valmiki was born. So for an enlightened master, there are no agami karmas. Because the enlightened master is never born again. Once you become Valmiki, you're no longer Ratnakar. But that's a very rare example. But for most of us, we are not Valmiki, we are not Swami Chinmayananda, we are not Jesus or Buddha. So we have to understand that our karmas are permanent and there is no escape. A good karma will give you good result, a bad karma will give you bad result until you become that. So the goal is Yasmin Drishte Paravare. So seek the higher, not to get freedom from karmas, but that is my goal in life. Seek the higher because that is my goal. That is my whole purpose in life, is to A, serve the world, and secondly, to know God. There's only two reasons for a human birth. There is no other reason. Serve the world and seek God. And serving the world will help you in seeking God. Because when you serve the world, your vasanas become less, your selfishness becomes less. There are a lot of new people here. So can I just briefly go over the BMI chart? You know, there are some new people, so if you don't mind. Most of you have heard it, but very quickly, this BMI chart was made by Swami Chinmayanandaji, our Guru, Gurudev. So he says that all of us think ourselves be the BMI, body, mind, intellect. That's what I think, that I am this body and I have a mind and intellect. And using the body, mind and intellect, I become a perceiver, feeler and thinker. With the body, I perceive the objects of the world. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. So body, mind and intellect is me. I become a perceiver, feeler and thinker, which is also called the ego. And the world is objects, emotions and thoughts. So me, through the body, mind and intellect, I perceive, feel and think the world of objects, emotions and thoughts. And what drives me is my vasanas. Vasanas are my tendencies, my habits that I have accumulated, not only from this lifetime, but from multiple lifetimes. So the goal of spirituality is to reduce the vasanas, reduce the selfishness, become more unselfish, become more caring, more loving. And as I reduce my vasanas, slowly, slowly through serving the world, through loving God, through meditation, through right knowledge, I come closer to Om. Om is God's presence. You can put here Krishna, Jesus, Buddha. You can put here, you know, Shiva, Mother Parvati, Mother Durga, Mother Lakshmi, Saraswati. But Om is God's presence, and we all have God within us, and Om represents that. So what we said today, that the seeker of truth should see the divinity not only within himself, but see it in all. All of us are Om. All of us are that divinity. By mistake, I think myself to be this body, mind, intellect, and I function in the world. So you don't say, I am a body, mind, and intellect. You say, I am Om. I have a body, mind, intellect. I am divine, and I have a body, mind, and intellect to function. And the way to reach God is to reduce the vasanas. So that is, in brief, this BMI chart. We do use that a lot. So I thought I would summarize, because some of you I see are new this time. So. Any other questions? Any comments? I think somebody had. Yes.
I'm short. Are enlightened people always just good?
Yes. Okay. Yes. In fact, I have told this story many times. Swami Ishwarananda used to, you know, he still does. Every year he takes people on a yatra. And one time he took people to a yatra in Chardham, you know, the four dhams, the four places. And one of them, Neeru was telling me, she went, I missed that one. So she said that they were told that there is this old lady, you must go meet her. She was an ordinary old lady wearing, you know, very simple clothes, just wandering there. So they said, go talk to her. She was not a Mahatma, no, not a Swami, nobody. So they go to meet her. And so when she sees a man, she embraces him. That's my Krishna. And when she is a woman, she says, this is my Radha. So for her, the whole world was Krishna and Radha. All the men are Krishna. So that is enlightenment, where you see the Bhagwan everywhere. So for her, there was no men or women. For her, she was nobody. She was not even a saint. So that is enlightenment, where you constantly deal with the world as if you're dealing with Bhagwan, you're dealing with Lord. So they don't have to be profound speakers. They could be. But there are some people who are sitting in the forest, in the Himalayas, meditating, and they realize and they give up their body without ever having come out of their samadhi. So you say, is their life wasted? No, because these people who are meditating in the Himalayas or in the monasteries and all, their positive vibrations are sustaining this world. This whole world is sustained by such people. That's why they say the rain doesn't fall for you and me. It falls for these people. So if it is raining, there has to be a great Mahatma sitting there for whom the rain is falling. So they are sustaining the whole world. So it does not mean, I mean, some of them are great speakers. Some of them, you know, could go around preach like Jesus and Buddha. Some of them never. They just stay in their samadhi and they go away. But their presence is so powerful. Like people say that Raman Maharishi's, where he is buried, if you go sit there, and he left his body, what, 50 years ago? You sit there, you can still feel his presence. Very powerfully, he's still there. I have told this story many times, but my mother's guru, he used to live in Kalimpong in West Bengal. And I went there around 2000, 2001. And he had passed away about 15 years ago. He left his body in 1985. He was my mother's guru. And we went to the room. He had a small little room with a small cot where he used to sit. And when you go sit and you close your eyes, the guru is still there. Very clearly you can feel his presence. So these people continue to bless the world even 50 years, 100 years, 200 years after they have passed, because their vibrations, their energy is there. So they don't have to necessarily give talks or write books or create missions. They could do that if they wanted to, like Swami Chinmayananda, or if they don't want to, they can just stay in one place. And still, their presence is very powerful. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, they're awake. When they're in that samadhi, they're awake. They are awake to the higher. They are in contact with the higher. They may not be aware of the world. See, in that samadhi state, they're no longer aware of the world. They're not even aware of their body. In true enlightenment, that's why there are 8 stages, you know. In yoga, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, dharana, pratyahar, and then dhyana and samadhi. In that 8th stage of samadhi, they're not even aware of their body, but they're aware of this higher existence and that this whole universe is that. Yeah. So that's why that lady, you know, she was always in contact with Krishna. She was always in contact with Radha. All the time her mind was there. And so she saw nobody but except her, them.
So I think we are aware and looking and, you know, seeking the consciousness. So I think we are always on that lookout, and that is why we are appreciative of those good qualities.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize them.
True. My 7th grade teacher, I still remember her so clearly, vividly. I still remember her exactly, her face and her... She was so good. Every child was so inspired by her. You know, so these are the people who were, you know, were even...
A mark in your life.
How old was that? 50 years ago. You know, but I still remember that. So that's what I'm saying, that, yeah, there are people you encounter daily in your daily life, right? Thank you, yeah.
Me, as a chance to at least go a step towards that.
Now that's a very good question. Like that lady's example I gave you, she was uneducated, that old lady. But the stories of Nisargadatt Maharaj, I've told that also before. Nisargadatt Maharaj, you know, he was a bidi maker. He never went to school. He was totally uneducated. And he was in Maharashtra. And his teacher told him, Tattvamasi, you are that. He said, I am that. He says, you are that. And his teacher just told, teacher must have seen something in him. But he was uneducated bidi maker. And for 2.5 years, he stopped making bidis. And he was wandering through the villages and forests saying, I am that, thinking, what did my teacher mean? And in 2.5 years, he was enlightened. And afterwards, I've tried to read his books, Nisargadatt Maharaj's books, and in the form of question answers, because he could only speak Marathi. So people would ask him questions, then he would answer in Marathi. And those books, if you try to read, you won't understand them, because his thinking was so high, profound, beautiful thoughts came out of him. So that's the point, is that he was not educated, but once he decided that that's my goal, he became even greater than the PhD scholars, his thinking, just without ever going to school. So yeah, that's the point.
Another example was Ramakrishna
Paramhans, right? Yeah, he was not educated at all. Once he knew Mother Kali, he became, and his thoughts are so profound. If you listen to Ramakrishna's teachings, very profound. True. Yeah, but education helps though. Because, see, these people who were uneducated and they must have in their, like Nisargadatta Maharaj, in his previous life, he must have studied. Otherwise, you know, I have heard Tattva Masi so many times from 1990. 25 years I'm listening. I'm still there. I have not gone anywhere. So the point is that knowledge helps, because to understand the scriptures, to understand Gita, to understand Upanishads, knowledge is useful. And this knowledge, once you apply that in your life, then even if you don't realize in this life, that will be a basis for your continuing journey. So that's why. So I think education definitely helps. If an uneducated person, you tell him you are that, and you know, tell him all this knowledge of the Upanishads and Gita, he'll think, you know, you're talking nonsense. But like most of us, we have gone to college, we have studied. So this knowledge will appeal to us more. So the path of knowledge is for the educated. It's not for the uneducated. For the uneducated, they tell them, do the path of karma and the path of bhakti. So serve the world and love God. Path of jnana is meant for people who have studied, who have gone to college, who are educated and all. That's why Chinmaya Mission, when they take these swamis, they do a 2.5-year training course in Mumbai, they have to be college graduates. If you are not a college graduate, they won't take you in that course, because they teach them in English and they teach them Sanskrit. And to study Sanskrit, you have to have a basis of grammar. If you have never studied grammar, you are a fifth grade pass, you know, they're not going to take you there. So knowledge is necessary, education is necessary, but it's not that if you're not educated, God will not accept you. That's not it. It's the extent of your devotion and love that is more important for him or for her.
So I believe that 4 generations back, all of our mothers, they were not educated. They gave all their life for their kids.
Right. Yeah, but then she had made effort to memorize that. See, that itself needs a lot of application. Like he said, you know, the sincerity of the effort to memorize that. So she had a probably very profound intellect, very advanced intellect, that if she could memorize the entire Bhagavad. So she was not uneducated. Maybe she didn't go to the regular school, but she was very much more advanced than you and me. You know, somebody who can do that. Yeah, previous life and then listening and, you know, dedication, I think, is very important. Dedication to this path is number one. Sincerity is very important. So thank you very much. Hari Om. We'll end with the closing prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om. Speak.